Okay, first thing about the sleep position is you need a firm surface upon which to sleep. Now, firm is a relative term. For some, firm is uncomfortable, others maybe very soft. So I'll say it this way. You need to have a surface that is as firm as comfort permits for you. So that has a fairly large range of texture. It won't do you any good to sleep on a hard surface upon which you're uncomfortable. So do make sure that you're comfortable. But you want to avoid those kinds of mattresses that scoop under like a soup bowl, you know, that sort of thing. That's not good. Now, there are lots of very adequate mattresses on the market. Quite often they're called orthopedic or something extra firm or whatever. Have a large choice from which to choose. My suggestion, unless you have some fashion commitment for fashionable beds and mattresses, is to use a futon, cotton futon. And again, you can get them various thicknesses and degrees of hardness or softness to suit your own needs. Okay, now once you have a nice firm surface upon which to rest, the positions that I'm going to show you are not absolutes. In other words, you're not going to go into the position with the idea or intention of holding the position all night, because you're going to change. You're going to roll around. You're going to move. So the idea of the position is really to initially align yourself, which is part of helping you to program yourself for better patterns in your sleep. And the first position I'm going to show you is the back position, lying on your back, the supine position. Now, in the supine position, we run across the same problem if the legs are extended as you do in constructive rest. We're going to solve it a little differently, however. So extend your legs. I want class C. As I told you, that tends to tilt the pelvis down, which creates stress on the lumbar and pushes the lumbar up, as it were. Okay, now, the way we're going to solve this is to put pillows under the knees. So raise your knees and I'll put these pillows under here. Just a minute. Lift. Okay, now bring your knees down. Okay, you need more pillow actually, but this will serve to show the class the essence of what it is. Now, I'm not recommending that you sleep in any particular position. It's up to you. But if you're going to be on your back, you do want some support under the knees to take the stress off the lower back. And it's also quite comfortable. If you've never slept with pillows under your knees, try it. Give yourself that luxury. Quite nice. Now, if you want to... See, Danny, can you hand me some more pillows or somebody back here? There's some foam rubber, I think, that we could use as pillows. Yeah, that's good. Give me a couple more of these. Okay. Oops, sorry. Didn't realize the knees were so high. All right. Now, let's see. Let's put something under your head. I'm just giving you a little bit of pillow. You can have whatever you need here. When you... When you're sleeping, The pillow can be under your neck as well as under your head. I use the head simply because I'm trying to work on the alignment of the cervical spine in constructive rest. But you don't have to do that in sleep. Put the pillow wherever it's comfortable for you. And I just wouldn't use a super pillow that would take the chin into the manubrium. Now, if you are a creature of comfort, you might want to have pillows under your arms. Bring your arms in by your sides. Yes. Little small pillows, which will tend to alleviate the stress that the arms resting on the floor as they pull against the shoulders. So you could do that, and you could get to be quite comfortable. So pillows under the knees, and then pillows under the head as usual, and that should set you up for a good beginning of a good night's sleep on the back, if you're going to start on your back. All right. Now, next position is side lying. Swigart thought side lying was the best position. Okay, just lie, and I'll show the class what we need to do. Now, here you've got to have sufficient pillow under the head so that the shoulder can relax under you. The legs, I would start off with some flexion, not stiffly out. About 90 degrees is fine. Now, if you want to sleep on your side, you can have one leg behind the other, either one, doesn't matter. Or you can have the two legs even the way you did. If you want to do that, you might want some padding between the knees and the ankles. Again, probably one single small pillow, thin pillow would suffice, or you could put a little towel in between your legs. That's just to keep the surfaces of the these condyles here as they rest against each other from being uncomfortable. Also the malleoli of the lower leg as they rest against each other can sometimes be uncomfortable because they protrude, as you can see. As far as the arm is concerned, what you're doing is fine. You could do this as an alternate. Either way, fine. You just want to have the... It's not good, really, to sleep on a body part because that tends to impede circulation. So I would avoid sleeping on my hands or arms or whatever. Try to use some sort of padding. Even gorillas make a nest kind of out of straw and branches and rest on it instead of using their arms. Okay. And you can sleep on either side. I would vary the sides. I wouldn't do the same side all the time. I'd change around a bit. Is that as we go into extreme folding, while it could be all right, usually it indicates a tightening, you know, and it's better to sort of be moderate in that. Same thing about stiffing the legs out. That means usually a person is very tightly, rigidly that way. So I go for about a 90-degree angle at the knee joint there, approximately, to work it out. I think it'd be much better. Okay, got one more position only you can go to. That's face down. Let me take these out of the way. Now here we run into several problems. Number one, that old devil lumbar spine coming back to haunt us. The weight of the body here is going to increase the curvature there, putting some stress. And that's very simple to handle. You just put a pillow or something under the lumbar spine. You might want to adjust that to be on the lumbar. You see, that helps to relieve that. Now, for those of you who do body work, massage and stuff like that, when you massage your partner, your client, if you're massaging with them face down, that you want to pay attention to. Have some support under the lumbar so as you exert pressure, you don't put stress in the lumbar spine. It's enough stress if a person is lying face down without any pressure on them, but when you add the pressure of massage, you're going to aggravate that situation. So put some padding, pillow or something under the lumbar. Now, even dancers who are very flexible, when they lie like this, there's stress at the ankle joints, as you can see. So we handle that by putting pillow under the legs there, and that takes the stress off of the ankles. If it's summer and warm, you can just dangle your feet over the edge of the bed. You won't need to do that. Okay. Now, up above, the heads turn one way or the other. It's not usually good to sleep the forehead down. We have some degree of shoulder and neck tension, and it can become a little uncomfortable. So to help that out, you can put a pillow under the upper part of the chest. Adjust it for you under the upper part of your chest. And that will take, and see, that makes it easier for you to let your head rest. Okay. Interesting thing here is you'll find that the head turns more easily or rests more easily on one side than the other. And one of the things that you can do to help the sides become more comfortable, both of them, especially the one that's more difficult, is to work on lengthening the spine. I hope that. I don't like to sleep in this position, but I use it as to check my neck tension out. And I use the image of the spine lengthening. I may stay in the position 5 minutes or so just to challenge the body. If there's discomfort, the side to which there's more discomfort is the side I work on with the spinal lengthening. Now, those are your three basic positions. Again, for those who didn't come in at the beginning of the presentation, important thing in sleeping is to have a firm surface upon which to sleep. Again, that firmness can be your choice. It must be comfortable, however. The other thing is, that's all right. Okay. Any variations on those could be fine. The important thing is that the surface, as I say, be as firm as you can be comfortable upon. Again, so that you're all clear about this, the positions I've been showing you are initial positions that you take and that you start your sleep off with, not to be thought of. Don't put an intention behind it that you're going to remain there or that you must remain in that position, because then you are simply imaging rigidity, and you don't want to do that. You change whenever you feel like it. What you'll find as you get more sensitive to lining yourself up and to being organized is that you'll tend to go from one centered position to another. Thank you very much. Get a good rest. All right. Could you take the rest of this back here? All right. not under your head, it's under your chest. Not under your head. If you put it under your head, you would increase the tension because you'd be putting more pressure on the neck on that. Okay. Yes. Yeah, that's fine. I know about the pillow. Right. That's why I said earlier in class that you put the pillow under your neck in sleeping as opposed to what we do in constructive rest, which is under the head. Put it under your neck is fine. Get to be totally comfortable there. I just wouldn't have a pillow that brings the chin into the manubrium. That's the thing you want to avoid. But under your neck is fine. Any other questions about the positions of sleep? Only problem now is to find enough time to sleep. Okay. Now, we're going to do a little exercise here where we divide into groups of three. And one partner is going to sit. And the other two are going to work on the partner who is sitting. So let's do that now. Let's just select a couple of people to work with you, two people, three people. Okay. Then decide which of the three will be first to work. Let that person sit, the other two persons stand. And I'll show you what we're going to do. All right. Now, want to see if we can begin to bring into the sitting position some of the ease of constructive rest. So one partner is going to come touch or lift very lightly under the knees to give you that sense of the knee ends of the femur bones extending into space or being lighter than the pelvic ends. The pelvic ends of the femur bones are going to be heavy, the weight being delivered into the pelvis. Okay, now, while this is happening, the other partner is going to touch the sacrum because I want you to let the sacrum lengthen, the tailbone lengthen, and I'd like to do that with the image of the fan because there you can watch the tassel lengthening as the fan widens. So, somebody, who's working with Kathy? All right, you touch in the sacrum, give support, and then you can lift upon the knees. All right? Now, everybody do that with his or her partner, and we'll take the next step in a moment. You don't lift the feet off the floor. Just take a little of the weight out so that your partner can let the, think of the knees floating up and lengthening. That's going to let you lengthen your spine. So let go your spine as you find the knees being supported and see the heads of the femur bones resting in the pelvis. This is what you do in constructive rest when you get support. See, Kathy, you don't have a partner there? All right, we'll get you. Okay, now the partner that's touching the lower end of the spine, you're now going to change your tactile aid and you're going to give some support under the back of the head and your partner will watch the half of the head behind the cardinal corona plane sliding up as the spine continues to lengthen. Okay, so you do that. All right. Now you can slowly release the tactile aid in both places. And those persons who are sitting, where you do the forward rock very lightly, you're just rocking very slightly forward on the now just balance on the sit bones, let that reduce to being almost imperceptible, and now let's nod the head. This is you were flexing your trunk at the iliofemoral, just a slow easy flexion of the head at the atlanto-occipital. Each time you go forward, watch the back half of the head sliding up. So that there's a slight upward intention with that back. Okay, and then walk forward on the sit bones. Bring one foot behind the other. And let's change to the standing position. Balance on your femur head, a little bounce. Okay, now let the second member of the group go into the position. We'll work on them. Okay, just take a moment to get centered on your sit bones. Think, even before you get the tactile aid, of the knee ends of your femur bones rising. Okay, you need to be on a lower bench. That bench is too high. Yes. See, your femur bone, you need that angle to be 90 degrees the way it is here. That's very good. Okay, now lift a little of the weight out of the knees to help float the knees. And then touch the sacrum in back. Give support on the sacrum in back. And as you feel that support, watch the sacrum as a fan widen in the lower part, the tassel on the fan lengthen. Just watch that. Person in back, work on the head now. Give the head a slight lift so the back half of the head slides up. And you still want to image the lower end of the spine releasing. This is what you do in constructive rest when you get the pants legs over the hanger. Okay, now release your tactile aid in both places. We'll give you tactile aid again here, just one. Now, do a little forward rock. Each time you rock forward, let the knee into the femur bones extend and rise, and the femur head sink into the acetabula there as you do the little rock. Then just balance on your sit bones, let the movement become almost imperceptible. And now nodding the head at the atlanto-occipital, watch the back half of the head slide up as as the tailbone continues to lengthen and the sacrum widen. Okay, then you can walk forward on the sit bones and put one foot behind the other and pry yourself up into the standing position. Balance on the femur heads and balance. Okay, now let's take the third member of the group. We'll work on you again. Just take a moment to find your sit bones and find the balance, the head in between. The knee ends of the femur bones are rising. The pelvic ends are delivering the weight into the pelvis. And the back half of the head sliding up as the sacrum, as a Japanese fan, widens and lengthens from below. Now let's start the tactile aid. Take some of the weight out of the knees. Support the sacrum with your hand. Now you might want to recall constructive rest, how when you get support in the knees, see, that lets you lengthen your spine. And this is what is going to help you learn to sit down on these benches and be comfortable. So just think it a moment. This knee ends are rising up as you let the weight of the legs deliver into the pelvis, and the sacrum widening and lengthening, tailbone lengthening, back half of the head rising up. Okay, now let's take the tactile aid from the lower part of the back, and now you're going to change to the back half of the head sliding up. See, all of these things are happening. We just focus on one or two at a time, but they're all happening. So you can go back and forth between them if you want to think them. And as the back half of the head slides up, the lower end of the spine gets longer and the sacrum widens as a Japanese fan. Okay, now we'll slowly remove the tactile aid. And now the little forward rock. Rock forward, let the femur heads sink into the acetabula. The knee ends of the femur bones extend and rise. And then let that reduce itself to where it's almost imperceptible. And then a little slight rocking of the head in the sagittal plane. Back half of the head slides up. As you rock forward. Okay. Now walk forward to the edge of your bench. Everybody, let the weight rest on the femur heads. remain standing, and I want to continue with one more little process. Now what I want to do is to partner just the person next to you, just going to be a one-to-one, not a three-group, two-group. And what we'll do first, Kathy, let me work with you, if you will. Come over and everybody can see. Yesterday I had told you about the armpit softening. We worked on that in constructive rest, and the sides of the ribs slanting down like the branches of a tree. That is to say, we did not want to pull weight up into the sides of the ribs, but rather the upness comes through the front, through the sternum, not through the sides here. And when we soften the armpits and let the ribs drop away from the soft armpits as we watch the sternum rise. So the tactile aid we're going to give is to come behind our partners and just go up into the armpits for a moment and touch them and give them an opportunity to let the armpits soften, to let the weight drop out of the armpits. And then that's going to let the weight drop on out of the ribs. It's as if you were letting the sides of your ribs drop down out of your armpits instead of attempting to pull the sides of the ribs up into here. That's what I'm talking about when I say let the weight drop out. Instead of pulling the sides of the ribs up into your armpits, you're going to let that weight drop out, or let the sides of the ribs in your thinking drop down. The ribs taper down. You want to allow that taper to happen. They are thrusting in the spine. I'm going to show you a cantilever. I didn't do that in this group. I'm going to show you a cantilever. I want you to see this mechanism because it'll help you with your imagery. You'll be able to see how, if I can get this to work. Okay, this is a cantilever. You have compression support on one end of the lever and tensile support on the other end. This is compression support. I'm compression support. This is giving tensile support. Now that's what your rib cage has, both tensile and compression. It's a cantilever really effect. So the ribs are resting in the spine for compression support. The muscle support pulling up on the manubrium. And also it's getting, in addition to that, a bracing effect from the first rib, which is a combination of tensile and compression. Of course, the first rib getting its support from muscles going into the spine from that first rib. But let's keep the image clean by just imagining that the sides of the ribs hang like this. We don't want to pull these up. The pull-up is going to happen from here, and the ribs are going to just dangle.
Your hand is from the
knee. Yeah. You could think of it that way, if you want.
And this is the spine?
Well, I'm the spine.
Right.
Yeah, I'm the spine. This would represent a rib. This represents the collective tensile force through here. Now, the part of the tensile force that we want to work on here is to let these hang and let this rise, the sternum rising up to the atlas to give you the tensile support, because this is what we want to think of it being, not down here. In other words, we don't want to use the intercostals to pull the ribs up here, but leave them free so they can breathe for you, because that's what they're going to be helping you do. All right, let's... Yes?
It seems like you're saying about the weight of the shoulders that's going down through the sternum. And then you say the weight of the ribs is up. You said the shoulders go down to the sternum into the ribs.
The weight, the compression support of the shoulders on the sternum is transferred through each rib to the spine. So your shoulders are resting on the spine. That's what I meant by that. That whatever compression support is on the sternum is being taken to the spine through the ribs. That's in addition to the tensile support that it's getting. It has both.
So there's a kind of upward and down movement on the sternum?
Well, I see what you're saying. Okay, if you want to think of the weight that travels down through the sternum, that's all right, but it's not going to go very far because at each level, the rib is going to take the weight and transfer it down to the spine. But you could think down through there. That's all right. You can do that too. That's fine. You can do that. That's all right. If you want to do that, that's fine. Okay, as long as you have your central axis moving up. Okay, now, let's give that tack delayed. I want to create this image. Let me work on you, Kathy, again. So everybody take the partner and let's watch now the softening of the armpits in here as you watch the sternum rise. Softening in the armpits and the sternum is rising. Weight just drops right down the sides, all the way down through the sides of the legs and feet. Okay. Now, I'm going to take that tachycardia away for just a minute after you finish. As you're standing with your weight resting on the femur heads, and these armpits, dropping the weight out of the armpits as the sternum rises, let your weight again rest on the femur heads. I've come back to that several times for a reason. Okay, now, and I'm going to help you with this more as we do constructive rest and perhaps another time in the upright position this morning. Let your breath rest on the femur heads. And bounce on the femur heads. We'll have more about that as the lesson progresses. Okay, now take your partner, change positions with your partner and work on your partner's armpits. Okay, I think you need to work, Kathy, with Louisa. So, you're letting the weight and or the ribs drop out of the armpits as the sternum rises to the atlas between the ears. Or you can just simply think of the puppeteer giving you support here, if that's more to your liking. Then take that weight or rib dropping with tack delayed right down your partner's sides. Through the outside of the leg and foot. Drops out of the armpits, catch it on the femur head, as it were. And as you let the weight of the body rest on the femur heads in your image, think of your breath resting on the femur heads instead of pulling the breath up into the manubrium. As the sternum slides up to the atlas, it's not taking the breath with it. The breath is going down to your femur heads. And a little bouncing on the femur heads for a moment. Okay. Now, make yourselves comfortable on the bench for a few moments. Our hyoid bones. That's one of the two floating bones in the body. You know what the other one might be? Pardon? Mm-hmm. That's right. Hyoid bone and patella, the only kneecaps.
Isn't there a tiny bone in the foot?
No, there's only two floating bones in the body. Okay, now, the tongue is... The base of the tongue is attached to the hyoid bone. Now, there are muscles that run from the hyoid bone down to about the middle of the clavicle that help to give the shoulder girdle tensile support. So, tongue tension can quite often be related to shoulder tension. And that's why we want to work on the tongue. We're going to work on the tongue through actually imaging it and also by imaging the hyoid bone. Let's first of all work with an image of the hyoid bone, which is more difficult to work with than the tongue. Then we'll come to the easier tongue itself image and work with that. And then we'll go back to the hyoid so that you can let them learn from each other, the images that is. The first thing that we want to notice about the hyoid is that it slants. It's on an angle. It isn't flat like that, but rather it has an angle about that of the lower jaw. In fact, I often think of the hyoid as being a replica of the lower jaw as I look at it, a little horseshoe-shaped. And that hyoid bone should not be jammed onto the Adam's apple, which is really the thyroid cartilage there. Because if it is, then it isn't going to be giving you the tensile support that it needs to be. You're interfering with that tensile flow of support. I also think of the hyoid bone being in the same line of movement as the sternum sliding up to the atlas. So that all goes together, really. So first thing I want you to do is to think of your hyoid bone tilting up toward the ears, toward that level of the lateroccipital. Take your fingers and run them up your jaw here to the ears. And at some point, put your fingers in the indentation here between the back of the jaw and the front of the mastoid processes. And imagine your hyoid bone tilting up toward the ears here. You see, that flows right along with the idea of the top of the sternum, or the sternum sliding up to the atlas between the ears. Now, an easier bit of imagery, and then we'll come back to this. First thing about the tongue is, let's just let it rest in the mouth without positioning it in any way. Just let it rest in your mouth, wherever it wants to rest. Now, here's some tactile aid that can help you for that. If you'll touch up under your chin here, that little depression in there I call a neck pit. We've been working on the armpits, softening and deepening them. Let's now take the neck pit and let it soften and deepen. And that will let your tongue rest in the mouth. It'll help. Hey, pardon? In the mouth. As you let the tongue rest in the mouth with a soft neck pit, deep, think of your breath as going either under or over or around your tongue. As you get that enables you to more easily let the air go in and out of the pelvic balloon that we worked on yesterday morning. In other words, I want to divorce tongue effort for breath. We don't want to involve the tongue, the effort of the tongue in breathing. No tongue tension for breath. The tongue rests in the mouth. And as you let the tongue rest in the mouth, that lets the hyoid bone tilt up and back, which also helps the sternum to slide up to the atlas. Yeah, that's all one piece of cloth, really. Just sort of woven together. So we're going to work on that in constructive rest. We've had a little go at it now, and it'll begin to work in your system. All right, now, we'll leave that alone for a while. And I want to go to another image I've been meaning to get to with you. Okay. Been working with you on letting the sit bones grow down to the heels, and of course that is to help release the hamstrings back here, muscles in the back of the legs. I'm going to give you a little different version of that today, which may reach some of you which the other image is not. We're going to imagine a line from the sit bone curving down to the top of the small leg bone. This is called the fibula. fibula was a device the Romans had, very much like our safety pin. They used to clamp the togas together with that. So when the bone was named, it was given the Latin name of fibula, this small bone here, which attaches to the upper part of the larger leg bone, which is called the tibia, and then to the lower part. The lower part of the fibula is called the malleolus, or malleolus. It looks like a little hammer, and that's what that word means in Latin. See that? That's your ankle on the outer side. Feel what you call your ankle, at least. Feel it. And that's what that is right there. Then the top of the fibula is under the knee joint. It's not a part of the knee joint. That's a little posterior and under the knee joint there. Okay, find that? Top of the fibula, find that right? Yeah, you see it sticks out a little bit. Okay, now to get back to our image, we're going to think of a line from the sit bone to the top of the fibula. And I call that image of that line a festoon, a festoon image. Do you know what a festoon is? Not too many people do. Well, I can tell you one example of a festoon. How about that? When I was in school, in college, we used to give parties in the gymnasium. And gymnasiums, as a rule, don't look very inviting for parties. They're very bare, and usually they have these rafters that have not been covered with a ceiling or anything like that. So from rafter to rafter, we would string crepe paper. We would festoon the gymnasium so that we had from rafter to rafter, drape it like that. Festoon. It's a legitimate word. I didn't make it up. It really is. Okay. Now, this line from the sit bone to the head of the fibula is like that. It has that draping kind of quality. So we're going to image that. You can let the slack increase. That's the image. Not through yet. I want to connect that up with another image. It's going to help the lower leg. We emptied sand out of the lower trouser legs. That's one way to do it. But I got something here that's a little more tangible. If you look at the tibia, that is the weight bearing part of your leg. It's the part of the leg that is directly in the axis line. If you continue that line of the axis of the femur coming from the center of the acetabulum to the center of the knee, and if you continue that line on down, the axis line goes right through the tibia, the large leg bone. The fibula is a brace, and we shouldn't deflect the weight out onto the outer part of the leg, onto the fibula. If we do, we overactivate muscles out on the outside of the leg and throw the balance of muscle action out. So, to discourage that, I have an image that I call the fibula swing. We're going to imagine that the lower end of the fibula becomes disattached and begins to swing like a pendulum from its upper attachment. That's the focal point. And the fibula is going to swing like a pendulum from here, having been imagined to come loose at the lower end, the distal end. Just swings like a pendulum. And we'll use that in alternation with and simultaneously also with the festooning. Okay, that image is clear. We'll call it out again when you're in constructive rest. Now one other image before we go into constructive rest. I want to give you an image for the line of movement from the pubic symphysis to the 12th thoracic vertebra. It's not a good idea to use the category as an image, although you could. That is, that line shortens. But let's use this. Let's imagine that there is a bead between the pubic symphysis, on the pubic symphysis, another one on the 12th thoracic vertebra. And let's watch those two beads come together. They'll meet somewhere around center, but don't try to make them do that. They'll just do it. Two beads, a bead on the pubic symphysis, another bead, 12th thoracic vertebra. Watch the two beads come together. And they meet. That line is much more nearly, as you stand, perpendicular, as you lie parallel to the floor, than you tend to think. Okay, that essentially is our work for constructive rest. So if you will, I'll tell you something else we're going to do, but it's just to, we're going to repeat the hissing to begin with. I just want you to practice that again, and we're going to touch the lumbar spine as you hiss, just to see if you're pushing with the lower back, pushing the air out. It'll also remind you to let this soften as you hiss rather than to tighten it. We'll also lift the knees as we do, you know, for the pants over the hanger. I especially want to do that maybe just a couple of times here and have you use the image of lengthening the spine so you begin to connect up the sitting exercise we did. I want to leave you with a clear idea that sitting can be comfortable on these benches. It isn't. If you learn to change your pattern, you can sit on the benches without a lot of discomfort. This could help you. Okay, we'll also work on the hyoid bone, the tongue, and the fibula swing, and the bead image. And then we are also going to do the sternum sliding between the ears. Water lily floating on a pond. This is a particularly good image to help create a sense of dynamics in constructive rest, which is still. And you're doing that through imaging as active or as passive as you wish by imaging the water as being either turbulent or moderately active or just very little active. Remember, the water lily is being tossed around by the energy of the water. Just look at that for a few moments before we start our processes.
You now. add to that, the knee, ends of the femur bones, in addition to being supported, lengthening. Fingers in the crevice of the jaw and the front of the mastoid processes. And now you can watch these two points that we're touching. You've let the hyoid bone tilt up toward that level. Now watch those two points widen, move away from each other. to take the line now from the sit bone to the top of the fibula. Watch the slack. Let it increase.
Experience
the lower back getting longer or softer or both, then let it happen. Can walk. watch the sternum sliding up to the atlas as the back half of the head slides up. Yourself as the beautiful water lily floating on water. The water is either turbulent or semi-turbulent. Whatever degree of activity you want, you image that. Okay, now the water lily
floating on the water. You're that. And you're being moved by the energy of the water rather than you're moving yourself. See, the water lily can't move. It can only be moved. That's what your image is. And as I said, it's a wonderful way to get yourself into a state of dynamics, you might say, where you, while you're still remaining passive in terms of being on the floor or wherever you may be lying for constructive rest, check you out on hissing a couple of times. And for this, we'll just do a kind of a general image of the clothes, yourself as an ensemble of clothing settling front against back. And we'll give tactile aid in the lumbar spine here. All right, would you hiss? Once again now, let's just think of the clothing settling front against back. Any other part of that image you want to do, and we're just really checking the lower back as you hiss. Now under the knees, just want to bring to your attention the process we did in sitting. Now let's just take some of the weight out of the knees. When you were sitting, we thought of the weight of the legs resting in the pelvis or toward the pelvis. You can still do that here and let the spine get longer. Extend all of that, and as the back is released, the spine is lengthened. That's the way you sit comfortably when you're sitting up, and you can do that. It's not impossible. It just requires practice. Exactly right.
just for comparison, let's do touch the armpits. I just want you to have a little of that experience. You're going to think of them getting softer and deeper and letting the weight out of the armpits. Let it fall out of the armpits. Of the ischium. Come down to the leg and touch the head of the fibula. Remember in your imaging that the head of the fibula is below the knee joint. It's not in it. You must be clear about that. Now watch the line between the two points. Tuberosity of the ischium, sit bone, the head of the fibula, that gets slack. It festoons, billows, like the sail of a boat, as this boat is, or the sail is filling with wind. Now go down to the malleolus of the fibula. Touch that. Tap it. And then run your fingers along the side of the foot to indicate that the fibula is swinging. again the sit bone and the head of the fibula. And let's use the two images alternately. The festoon billows as the fibula swings. The fibula swings as the festoon billows. Touching the sit bone, tip end of it, the tuberosity, and the top of the fibula there. And the festoon is between the two points. It billows. It gets more slack. You can't possibly imagine too much slack in there. As long as you're not doing any voluntary movement, just see it billow as much as you like. Down to the malleolus, the distal end of the fibula. Tap it. It comes loose in your image, and the bone swings, brushing against the outside of the foot. The fibula has become free at the malleolus. Once again, touch the sit bone, see the festoon becoming more slack as the fibula swings, and as the fibula swings, more slack in the festoon. Do the bead image now. Touch your pubic symphysis and watch the two rami bracing against each other. And then see a bead at the pubic symphysis. Another one is going to be on the 12th thoracic vertebra. Help find the level of that by coming about an inch below the xiphoid process. That's the lower part of the sternum. Image them coming together. They move toward each other and they meet somewhere about center. You don't really have to make them meet at center. They will do that. Just let them meet. When they meet, you let whatever process the image stimulates continue to happen as you let go the image. In other words, it's not that you're going to hold the beads frozen together in time, but rather they're moving. It goes out of your consciousness, out of your imaging as they have met. The image has completed itself, so you let go of it. Now, we're going to get tactile aid under the lumbar spine. You still use the same image of the beads coming together. And as the beads come together, if that encourages your lower spine to soften and lengthen, either one or both, let it happen. If it doesn't, don't fake it or force it. But I just want you to be on the lookout for it and be willing to let it happen if it does. As you shorten the distance between the pubic symphysis and the 12th thoracic vertebra, the lower spine will lengthen. Watch the folds of the knees and thighs be deep, get deeper. All right, now the knee and the femur bone is going to extend.
flames through the creases. And now as you unfold, you can image the tongue resting on the hyoid bone, in the mouth. Okay. Now we're going to take the back half of the head is going to be sliding up as the spine lengthens as you stand on your knees. And bring one leg under and forward. Now you're going to be pushing from the floor into the acetabulum as the back half of the head slides up and spine lengthens. Okay. Just balance on the femur heads. Watch the sternum sliding up to the atlas between the ears as the weight drops out of the armpits, as the tongue rests in the mouth. Breath rests on the femur heads. Okay, now cycle your arms above your head, thinking up the front and down the back. The rib cage is an umbrella. It's inside the shoulder girdle, and the rod of the umbrella is your central axis. Tip end of the umbrella is where your head rests. As you hiss, the umbrella closes around the central axis within the shoulder girdle. Hiss. Slide the scapula up over the ribs and then let the arms drop. And again, let's slide the scapula up over the ribs. Soft elbows and then drop. Okay, we're going to do just a very quick improvisation. Benny, can you provide the music for us? All right. Fibula swings more freely and the festoon from the sit bone to the top of the fibula gets more slide. The tongue is resting in the mouth. Hyoid bone tilts up toward the ears. Breath flows freely into the pelvic balloon. And the rib cage is inside the shoulder girdle. Thank you. very much. Have a good day.